Next up, we have Mark Stannert with local views of the news.
This is Local Views, one last time in June '09. Although there isn't much topical on the topic this week, let's talk a little more about health care reform. As the first drafts of bills are circulating in Congress, we're all pretty sure that a majority of the people favor some sort of reform, if only to hold down their own costs or provide the coverage that they don't even have right now. Beyond that, there's no clear mandate. We're also pretty sure that the health care providers, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, and such will spend big money to make sure they can keep making big money. They'll spend it on campaign contributions and other forms of congressional persuasion, and they'll spend it on advertising directly to the voting public. The New York Times published a poll last week in which 85% of the respondents agreed that the health care system needs fundamental changes or a complete overhaul. The same poll, however, said 77% are satisfied with the quality of the care they're now receiving. No clear mandate. In that sort of public opinion paradox, Congress probably will be smug and satisfied to pass anything called reform, even if it reforms nothing. The Times poll also showed that only 18% thought the Republicans were likely to improve health care. So, with a solid majority in both houses and that sort of attitude among the voters, congressional Democrats don't really have to compromise on the issue, so when they do, blame it on the influence of the health care profiteers. The American Medical Association packs the power on this issue. Imagine what would happen if the AMA suddenly jumped up to advocate single payer. Right now, the AMA is firmly rooted in the provider's camp, but tradition and habit are the only real reasons for that association. The term socialized medicine and the AMA's opposition to it began in the 1950s, when any idea could easily be destroyed by labeling it socialist. In that era, most doctors were in the business for themselves, and their business was life and death, so it had plenty of leverage in an open market. They sure didn't need any government interference with their paychecks. Well-funded opposition from the AMA prevented the acceptance of Medicare for a decade, and Medicaid even longer. The AMA failed then and continues failing to recognize the real threat to doctors' interests, the insurance companies. These days, few doctors are self-employed. They may have some ownership in the company for which they work. They may have founded it and sit on its board of directors, but when they're actually practicing medicine, they have a boss. Their careers now look about the same as they would look had the industry been socialized a long time ago. Since doctors no longer control the business of medicine, they at least ought to be neutral, if not enthusiastically supporting single payer. But instead of being an association of physicians, the AMA actually is a powerful arm of the corporate medical establishment. Doctors employed by the AMA write the guidelines under which the insurers and the HMOs decide which treatments get funded. The AMA's resistance to change is roughly equal to that of General Motors or Exxon. The institutional culture is so firmly established, the institution actually acts against the interests of the people who live and work in it. Neither doctors nor their patients need corporate health care any more than they need big cars and gasoline, but they just can't let go of it. It's the way they've always lived. Opponents of single payer like to talk about choice, as though selecting an AMA doctor is the only choice one needs to make. You may be able to choose from among three or four different insurers, but you can't choose anyone who isn't working for the shareholders. The AMA culture wants to limit your choices to its own narrow vision of health care. Symptom diagnosis and treatment with drugs and surgery. Everything else is branded as quackery. You can choose it, but only if you can afford it. One local note, the Grass Valley Union reported last week that Emgold Mining Corporation has reported losses of about $11.5 million over the last 2.5 years, a period roughly corresponding to the time Emgold has been beating the drum about reopening the Idaho-Maryland mine in Grass Valley. Sound familiar? This is at least the third time in the last 20 years some incarnation of this Canadian company has stirred the same pot without ever mining an ounce of gold. Gold is harder than ever to dig out of the ground, But the word gold has the same power as always to separate fools from their currency. That's Local Views for this week. This is Mark Stannert reminding you that this commentary doesn't dig much of anything for KVMR, its management, staff, or contributors. Email Mark at caloki.com.
That's our newscast for this evening. The KVMR Evening News is produced by the staff and volunteers of the news department. A special thanks tonight to Chelsea Davis and Lindsay Campbell, and also Richard Tews. If you've heard something on the broadcast that you'd like to hear again, check out the news page of our website, kvmr.org, where you can listen on demand, download audio, and or subscribe to our podcast. For the entire KVMR news team, I'm Paul Emery. Have a good evening.